Hey, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, January 9th, 2012, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That's me.
Nice to meet you. No, it's not.
We're off to a roaring start. Holy cow, the new year is upon us, and I'm all refreshed from my winter break and raring to go. So, time to crank up the old microphone so I can bring you another Q&A show. Hey, did you know that this year marks my fifth year in podcasting? The actual anniversary isn't for another month, but I thought I'd take this opportunity to toot my own horn, so to speak. And I foresee lots of very exciting programming coming your way in 2012. But now, I have a great show in store for you, because it's always a thrill to discover what my correspondents toss my way, and you can always count on me, your intrepid sexologist, to respond with clever, resourceful, and oh-so-informative responses. Hey, it's what I do. But before we get to that, I have a word from our sponsor.
Hey, I give you $50 not to do this.
That's actually where I'm going with today's sponsorship, because this week's show is brought to you by DrDickSexAdvice.com and DrDickSexToyReviews.com. That's right, sex fans, our sponsor today is me. You'll have to excuse this shameless self-promotion, but I wanted to call attention to a standing invitation for everyone in my audience to support and underwrite these marvelous shows. I'm exceptionally proud of the quality programming I've been bringing you, my international audience, over the last 4 years. I've presented a variety of extraordinarily informative, enriching, and entertaining shows, interesting interviews, enlightening Q&A, and even some fun product reviews. I mean, where else can you find this sort of diverse sex-positive programming? And all of this always comes to you absolutely free. Okay, so right about now you're probably asking yourself, hey, Dr. Dick, how can I help support and underwrite this effort? Well, I'll tell you. You just mosey on over to either one of my sites, DrDickSexAdvice.com or DrDickSexToyReviews.com, and look for the Donate button. It's a blue heart-shaped icon. Click on it and make your contribution. Any amount will do. But for those folks donating $50 or more, they will receive a swell thank you gift. Excellent personal lube, smutty porn DVDs, wonderful sex toys, or some delicious erotica. Be the first one on your block to join me in bringing the world this fun, informative, and enlightening programming. And now I'm processing donations via PayPal, so it's even easier than ever before to make your contributions. Okay, on with the show. So we begin today with somebody who simply identifies himself as P. We don't know where he writes from or his age. He writes, "Hi there, Doc. Wondering if two men can be connected to an e-stim unit. Thinking about having both of us wear a conductive cock ring. We make the connection when he fucks me. Would this work? We just lay back and get off. What if we put our cocks side by side using a masturbation sleeve?" I guess so. We did a whole bunch of e-stims reviews a couple of years ago, and you can find them at DrDickSexToyReviews.com. All you got to do is use the category pull-down function in the sidebar and look for the category fetish. And under that major category, you will find a subcategory called electro stimulation, and you'll find all our reviews there. And you can also look for more specific information on the Paradise Electro Stimulations website, the PES, that's Paradise Electro Stimulations, and you can connect through them, connect to their community page through their major website, which is PESElectro.com. Good luck. Next, we hear from Kyle. No age or location identified. He writes, if a female doesn't have sex for 4 months, would she be tighter or looser? Are you talking about her pussy or her mind? Can't rightly say I have an answer to either. What I can tell you is that both a pussy and a mind are both tightened through exercise, thinking on the latter incidents and Kegel exercises in the former incidents. Don't know what Kegel exercises are? Don't worry. I will be addressing that subject in a few minutes, so stay tuned. Next, we hear from a guy whose name is Hans, and he writes from Michigan. This is what he says. Dear Dr. Richard Wagner, I'm happily writing with nary a concern and only an almost boastful, boyishly charmed love story. This real-life fantasy love is shared by two 51-year-old, physically fit and superbly high libido lovers who adore each other and who cannot keep their hands and mouths off each other. I'm thrilled to say my blonde, gorgeous wife is a former runway model who is succulent to ogle and any man or woman who is equally as horny for me as I am consistently horny for her, and who shares my devotion to education, language, fine arts, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, and daily and nightly lovemaking. I am blessed to be the man and the lover she craves. 6'5", tall, athletically built, and very attentive to her desires, her lustful wishes, and her needs for affirmation as a beautiful, gifted woman. You, Dr. Dick, also need to know she and I have both been married twice before, and we met just 3 years ago, and we've been married since August 2009. Two questions for you from this perfect, blissful romance. One, is it often reported that a 51-year-old woman is daily capable of getting gloriously, gushingly, slopping wet every time we make love? And two, is it even more atypical for this horny, soaking wet female response to occur when that gorgeous female was sodomized repeatedly as a 9-year-old youngster? I don't want to shock or shake anyone, but this loving, delicious woman I daily pleasure is my wife, sexy soulmate and sophisticated beauty, and I'm just curious to know how unique or remarkable of a life experience this life is. I'm not boasting or playing around. Victoria and I do lustfully live this heavenly gift of our relationships. Signed, Hans. Well then, sir, how you do go on, and thank you for making my day. I've recently been up to my ears in woeful stories from the sexually worrisome. What a glorious change of pace it is to hear of your sexual bliss. Thanks for sharing. To your two questions. One, is it often reported? Nope. I suggest not. More likely than not, when I hear from a 51-year-old woman, it is an opportunity for her to vent about her partner's disinterest in sex, or at least with them, or that they have lost interest in sex with their partner, despite the fact that their partner regularly pesters them for sex. So you've hit the jackpot, both literally and figuratively. And number two, is it even more atypical? Yes, it is completely atypical for a youngster of any gender who has been repeatedly sodomized at age 9 to be scar-free in his or her adulthood. If your wife is such a person, then my hat is off to her. All the best to both you and Victoria.
My first husband, he's very handsome, but too crazy. It seemed like all we did was fight and make love, fight and make love, fight and make love. One time, I'm not kidding you, we fell out the window together.
That's so nice to know. So, hey, Dr. Dick, what is that toll-free podcast voicemail hotline telephone number you keep talking about? Why, it's 866-422-5680. Don't be shy. Let it fly. Next, we hear from a 30-year-old male who identifies as himself as Chatman, and he lives in Toronto. He writes, "While she is sucking me, and I'm about to come, should she suck while I am shooting? Does it make a difference?" Well, it's hardly for me to say, now is it? Sucking a guy off to completion or swallowing a guy's nut during a blowjob is really a personal decision on the part of the sucker. Oh, and the suckee has a whole lot to do with it too, because if your spooge tastes bad, then the likelihood that the sucker will finish you off diminishes greatly. I guess at this point I'd like to ask you how much you know about your jizz. Here are a few fun spooge facts. It's protein, baby, and it contains about 12 to 15 calories per cum shot, the same amount found in an egg white. Alcohol, drugs, and nicotine will make your spunk bitter. If you want your nut to be sweet, avoid junk food and have lots of fruits and greens in your diet instead. Fruit juices like pineapple, citrus, cranberry are known to make your cum taste sweeter. The higher the sugar content, like melons, mangoes, apples, or grape, the sweeter your baby batter. Likewise, vegetables like parsley and celery are also recommended. And just so you know, consuming these things even 20 minutes before a blowjob can affect the taste of your cum. So avoid fish and red meat because they produce a bitter, fishy taste because of the alkaline content. Chemically processed alcohol can also make your joy juice taste bitter. Naturally fermented drinks are less likely to do so. Garlic and onions are likely to produce strong odors since they are high in sulfur, so lay off of these. And of course, asparagus is to be avoided pre-blowjob too. And here's the final tip. You can be assured that there are trace amounts of unmetabolized drugs, both pharmaceutical as well as recreational, in your cum. This is not as much of a concern for jizz lappers as it is for piss drinkers, but you oughtn't fool yourself into thinking that there is no residue. Good luck! Next up is Matt. He writes, "Hello! My name is Matt. I am 23, from England in the UK. I live with Lucy, my girlfriend, who is 23 years old also. We both are your average white couple who are both professionals, and we currently live together. We are both due to marry at the end of March 2012. We have been together for about 3 years now, and we both feel we want to marry. I've recently been talking to Lucy about our sex life together and sharing the ideas and fantasies I have had. Lucy asked me if there was anything I wanted sexually before I married her in March, and I openly told her I had always wanted her to take foreign men in her. Lucy then asked me exactly what I meant, so I openly told her that I have secretly always wanted her to spread her legs for different races of men. I said I always wanted to secretly see black and Chinese Asian men openly fuck her in front of me, preferably a really mixed group of men, black, Asians, Arabs even, and really share her about and come inside her. Lucy was a little shocked when I told her about my idea, then asked me seriously if I liked her to do this before I married her, and I told her to her face I really liked to see her being had by foreign men. Lucy then did not bring up the subject until a week later when she asked me the same question again, and I replied yes again. This was followed by a discussion about why I would like her to do this, and I told her I've always wanted to see her being the little white whore for foreign men, preferably before I married her. After a few weeks of chats about this, Lucy has finally agreed to do this before I marry her in March. I promised all the men we find will be tested at the local clinic for STDs, etc. And in return, she promised that she would allow each man to come inside her vagina. We have agreed 5 males would be the maximum we would allow to have her, and that only one man at a time would have sex with her. We are starting to look for males at present, and a lot of foreign men are very keen to have sex with her after chatting with them, some face-to-face and others online. We are in the final stages of trying to organize this now, but I am just questioning my feelings about this. Is it normal? I often think how much I'd like the idea of getting Lucy straight after black, Chinese, and Asian men have all had sex with her and she is dripping wet carrying all those other men's load inside her. Lucy has never had sex with any foreign men before and she asked me why I really like the idea. I told her, just knowing that a few black men have slipped their black cocks up her pussy really turned me on, knowing that black men have dumped their cum inside her vagina and that my future wife is now carrying black seed in her womb would make me really want her. I also said her Chinese and Asian men often don't get a chance to spread a white woman's legs and to take them. So I told her I really loved to see her legs spread for Asian men so they can especially dump their cum in her pussy. I am really keen to marry Lucy, and I have set the goal for her to be a real cum dump for one night only before we marry, and she has decided to make all my ideas come true. I feel really perverted for wanting this. Is it normal? Thanks, Matt. Hey, Matt, thanks for your very detailed message. It appears to me that your basic question is, am I normal? Really? You want to know if you're normal? Normal compared to what? If you're comparing your sexual interest to the general population, you certainly would fall well outside the norm. But I think you know that already, huh? However, if you compare yourself to other kinksters, well then, you're normal as all get out. In fact, if you compare your fetish, and that's what we're talking about here, don't you know, with the fetishes of your kinky peers, it's not all that outlandish. In fact, they even have a name for your fetish, a cuckold. Lots of men share your interest, and some women get off on it too. If your Lucy is one such woman, you have it made. However, I have 2 concerns. 1, are you certain that Lucy is into this? If she is, great. If she's not, there's a problem. There's even a problem if she says she'll do this for you because she loves you and doesn't want to disappoint you. That tells me that she's not really into it all that much, but she'll do it anyway. There's the problem. And 2, I am really put off when you say you not only want these racially diverse men to fuck Lucy, but you want them all to pop their load in her. That tells me you are more interested in your fetish than in Lucy's well-being. And that really sucks, my friend, and not in a good way. You're beginning to sound really selfish. Here's the deal. Lucy would be a fool to fuck some stranger, even to please you, without stipulating that the dude had to wear a rubber. Come on, Matt. You just didn't wake up yesterday, did you? Wearing protection is not only about disease prevention, although that's an important part. It's also about birth control. And since no birth control method is 100%, it's better to be safe than sorry. So pull your head out of your ass, Matt. You want Lucy to join you in this little romp? Make sure that she is protected. Now, let me ask you a question. What is it about watching your girlfriend get fucked by all these men that turns you on? Is it just so that you can see some big black cock? The reason I ask is that I believe that you have other fetishes that you have yet to identify. I also believe that you are really, really kinky, and that things will only escalate from here. I also believe that you are not being totally upfront with Lucy. I'll bet that when this little fuckfest is over, you will come up with something even more bizarre. And I wonder what little Lucy will have to do next to please you. Good luck.
I'm just gonna say it. He needs to be checked by a specialist.
You'll get no argument from me. Okay, next we hear from someone who identifies him or herself as Minou, M-I-N-O-U. He writes, or she, "Dear sir, I've been experienced BDM practitioner for about 5 years now, and the first 2.5 to 3 years identifying as a submissive and masochist, and the last 1.5 years or so as a top or sadist. I've been doing play piercings on myself and others for 2 years, and I was trained by a notable Canadian body piercer in technique, sterility, cross-contamination issues, and continuously reading and researching what I am doing. I also use an autoclave at a friend's piercing shop and have a bit of biology in my background. That being said, I am not a doctor. I'm wondering about a little advice from a medical professional about performing the techniques in BDSM activities. I have attempted to research this technique, but came across a lot of, I don't know this unless you're a doctor, but know that people in the lifestyle have been doing this for many years safely if certain precautions are followed. So my understanding of the safety precautions and equipment I need are at least..." And then he lists a whole bunch of things about sterile this and sterile that. And then he continues his question about scrotal infusions. He says, "My understanding of the technique is that it is simply an injection of saline, which forms pockets under the surface of the skin. What risks may I not be considering? Again, I know that people in the BDSM community do practice this safely, and yet I know that there's room for error, as long as one doesn't introduce any foreign bacteria organism into the site of the injection and doesn't inject into a muscle or other bits. It seems straightforward to pinch up the skin, a bit of the skin, and do it in a play piercing scene, and then inject some of the saline. Obviously, I need a gravity-filled fed system or a hypodermic syringe with single-use hypos, which I'd change after each bit of fluid. Obviously, I must read the reaction of the participant and get them to tell me, as each bit of fluid is added, how things are feeling, and is it getting too tight, and observing the skin tension myself. I know that I must avoid air bubbles in the system as well, and if you wouldn't mind a little advice for the developing safe as I can find the information to be player in an alternative sexual lifestyle, I'd be most appreciative. Thank you for your time." Well, I applaud your desire to get further information from a medical professional about the edgy play you are doing. Unfortunately, you've come to the wrong place. I am a PhD sort of doctor, not an MD kind of doctor. I have written and spoken about scrotal infusion on a couple of occasions, and to find out what I've had to say about this interesting fetish, go to my site, drdicksexadvice.com, and look for the search function in the header. Type in scrotal infusion and presto. However, for the very specific information you are looking for, you will need to look elsewhere. You know, I wish I could direct you to a physician who could help you, but I don't know of anyone. Doctors, the medical variety, are notoriously skittish about discussing medical procedures and or dispensing medical advice online or via email. I guess they figure they're just going to open themselves up to litigation if they do. So, let me ask you, are you familiar with FetLife? Perhaps you will be able to connect with a medically trained professional there. Good luck.
It's supposed to hurt.
You've hit the nail on the head there, don't you know? So, hey, Dr. Dick, what is that toll-free podcast voicemail hotline telephone number you keep talking about? Write it down. It's 866-422-5680. Use it. Next, we hear from Joey, who's 25, and he writes from St. Louis. I'm an Italian male, only sexually attracted to African-American men. My question is, every guy I have sex with has an insanely large penis. Girth, length, and sometimes both. I am worried that my ass is going to be permanently stretched. Is there anything that I can do? Well, if you want to be a power bottom with a resilient asshole, or if you want to train your bunghole to accommodate the big boys like the stunning black men you are dating, you will have to start by making sure your PC muscle is in tip-top shape. Don't know your PC muscle from a hole in your head? Then you haven't been paying attention over here at DrDickSexAdvice.com, because I go on and on about this timely topic a lot. Let's start with a bit of an anatomy lesson, shall we? You have several pelvic floor muscles. The one we're most concerned with is called the pubococcygeus muscle, or the PC muscle for short. Get it? Anyhow, it supports and holds up in place our internal organs in both women and men. This muscle is attached to the front of our pubic bone and goes all the way around to our butthole. And when one's PC muscle is taut and toned, a contraction can be felt all over the pubic area. Cock, cunt, clit, prostate, and asshole. So, you can see how important this muscle is to performance as well as pleasure for both women and men, right? Now, to keep your PC muscle taut and toned, you do Kegel exercises. What are Kegel exercises, you ask? Sheesh, you haven't been paying attention, have you? Kegels are muscle contraction and relaxation exercises designed to help restore tone to the muscles that surround the opening of your urethra, anus, and most importantly, your prostate. So let's try this for starters. Imagine that you are trying to stop yourself from farting or trying to hold your pee. Notice the feeling of squeezing and lifting. It's a sensation of your pelvic muscles tightening and drawing up. Try it now, while you're listening to me. That's the beauty part of Kegels. You can do them anywhere, at any time. If you're finding it difficult to isolate the muscle group, insert a finger in your ass before doing a Kegel. If you feel pressure around your finger while you are tensing your PC muscle, then you are on the right track. Here's a starter routine for you to work on. Start with 5 strong, prolonged squeezes, hold for 5 seconds, and then relax. Then do a series of 10 rapid contractions in a row. Doing 3 sets of these 2 types of Kegels twice a day for a week is your goal. Now let's go over that one more time. Start with 5 strong, prolonged squeezes. Hold for 5 seconds and relax. Then do a series of 10 rapid contractions in a row, doing 3 sets of these 2 types of Kegels twice a day for a week is your goal. When you've accomplished this, you are ready to increase the set to 8 or 10 prolonged squeezes and 20 rapid contractions in a set twice a day for a week. The advanced Kegler is able to vary the type and duration of his or her PC squeezing, slow prolonged clenches to quick flutters. If you really want to pump things up, use a small dildo or a butt plug when you are practicing your Kegels. Good luck.
And why are you smiling?
I'm smiling because Kegels are fun. I'm doing mine right now. So next I want to share with you an exchange I had with Christopher Ryan, the author of Sex at Dawn. But first, I have to read a column from the J. Brian Lauder, who writes for Slate magazine. The title of his piece is Porn That Women Like. Why Does It Make Men So Uncomfortable? Here's the column. In the winter issue of Good Magazine, Amanda Hess has a fascinating profile of James Dean, a young, handsome porn star who is becoming famous for actually appealing to women. Due to his boyish, slightly skater punk aesthetic, naturally toned body, and ability to connect emotionally, or at least appear to, with his female co-stars, Dean has garnered a following of devoted young women in the industry who, in most cases, ignore him entirely. Hess explains that Dean's schoolboy charm is what makes him approachable and sexy to his female fans. Dean has carved out a niche in the porn industry by looking like the one guy who doesn't belong there. Scroll through LA's top porn agency sites and you will find hundreds of pouty women ready to drop to their knees, but just a few dozen men available to have sex with them. These guys all have a familiar look. Neck chains, frosted tips, unreasonable biceps, tribal tattoos. Dean looks like he was plucked from a particularly intellectual frat house. Hess goes on to discuss why there aren't more guys like Dean in the male porn star stable, and her findings tell us just as much about male viewers' hang-ups as they do about women's erotic preferences. Part of the problem is that men, who largely control the porn industry, imagine that women want everything big. Big arms, big abs, big dicks. As Hess puts it, when what they really want is something a little less overwrought. One of Hess's subjects described her attraction to Dean thusly. He was almost like a guy that you would just hang out with at Hebrew school. But the real obstacle to this proliferation of female-friendly porn stars is, oddly, a rather nasty and subtle strain of homophobia, revealed in the following Double Blind. A straight male performer must be attractive enough to serve as a prop, but not so attractive that he becomes the object of desire. Hess is spot on. Men need to see a penis in straight porn, presumably to stand in for their own, but not one that is attached to a guy who might be threateningly attractive, not to mention plausibly appealing to the women involved. Maybe this insistence on a blank male slate, a kind of reverse objectification when you think about it, makes it easier to project oneself into the disembodied penis, but it also protects men from potentially scary experience of being turned on by both partners of a heterosexual encounter, which, yes, does involve another dude. In other words, the bland interchangeability of the unreasonable-looking men allows them to avoid confronting the terrifying specter of homosexuality. Hess's informants within the industry confirm this when they explain that a man simply cannot be the focus of a porn flick, in the film itself, or even on a video cover, because the consumers will be spooked. The sad thing here is that in this arrangement, everyone loses. Women cannot get the kind of porn they want from the mainstream. There are, of course, many excellent indie outfits who make great lady-centric films. As an insidious kind of abstract homophobia, it reinforces, and perhaps worse of all, many straight male viewers suffer unnecessary emotional and sexual stunting. It's telling that it was a woman, Pamela Peeks, who first recruited Dean into the porn life. She obviously knew what she liked, even if it was a gamble. But now that Dean's skinny Jewish ass has proven its worth, perhaps other producers, female as well as male alike, will be willing to challenge and entice their viewers with a more diverse casting couch as well. Now, back to the exchange I had with Christopher. He writes, I see you tweeted a link to the J. Brian Lauder column in Slate. I got it from a friend this morning. Thought my comments might be of interest. And this is Christopher's comments. It was an interesting argument, but I don't think it holds much water. If the point was not to threaten male viewers, then why all the big muscles and big dicks? There are some conventionally attractive male porn stars like Rocco Siffredi who do very well commercially. To me, this is just overthinking. Guys become porn stars because big dicks are better for getting the right penetration shots and allow for more camera angles and the ability to keep an erection in front of a dozen people and come on cue are rare abilities. Simple as that. I wrote back, "Gee, I guess I missed your tweet about the article. Actually, I have a different take on this topic than you. I have some evidence, albeit anecdotal, that a lot of straight men would rather not see a male performer in porn. I used to ask all my straight male friends about this, and when I was making porn with my production company Daddy-O Productions, I had plenty of occasion to ask industry people about this very thing. Producers of straight porn would tell me that, for the most part, they keep the male parts, no pun intended, to a minimum. That is, unless they were trying to appeal to a couple's audience. Yes, big dicks are primo, as you suggest, but that's all you really get to see. I used to be very curious about this, being the big fat homo that I am, because I want to know why straight porn mostly features the chick and not much more than the dick. Like, I also could never understand the Ron Jeremy phenomenon. He and his ilk, and there are plenty of them, are butt ugly. And if it weren't for his big dick, he'd be a failed accountant in Brooklyn, instead of being a recognizable celebrity hawking boner pills on late-night TV. Men don't like seeing the competition unless the competition was certifiably unattractive. And that's why most straight porn is a disappointment to us homos. If we're going to swallow all that pussy, so to speak, there'd better be some hot man flesh there to wash it down with, as it were. Things may be changing, but I don't think they're changing all that much or all that quickly. Besides, I think that this is one of the reasons that a lot of women like gay porn. They like seeing the object of their desire without the distraction of some bimbo porn starlet with a plastic rack.
I have seen this little show before, lying on the bed with a tall senior. One minute you're just friends watching Falcon Crest, and the next you're lying underneath the air hockey table with your bra in your pocket.
Well, there is that. Our last question for today brings us back to how we began today's show, a question about eSTIM. And it comes from a fellow named Lee, but we don't know anything more about him. He writes, "Is it safe to use electrostimulation of the penis if you have an inflatable penile implant? Thank you, Lee." I have no way of knowing the answer to that question. I suspect, knowing what I do know about both eSTIM and inflatable penile implants, is that the two things are not incompatible. But I can't say that for certain. Are you talking about external stimulation or urethral insertion stimulation? I suppose you could try it on yourself, low level of stimulation to start, and work your way up from there. If you do experiment, be sure to let me know what you find out. It would add to my knowledge base and may be of assistance to someone else down the line. Thanks for your question. Now, Lee writes back right away, and he says, "Thank you for your answer. I was not using it in my urethra, only externally. I was concerned about the material that the implant tubing was made of, possibly breaking down over a period of time. No one else seems to know the answer either." And I said, "Like I said yesterday, I don't think that you'll have any problems. I suspect that the implant tubing is made to last. I don't see how eSTIM could break down the plastic, and I'm assuming the tubing is plastic. Am I correct? Do let me know how things work out for you. Good luck."
Dad, you have got to talk to Mom. She is, like, completely freaking out and embarrassing me.
Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in again next time for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, today's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Sex Advice and Dr. Dick's Sex Toy Reviews. Folks, I need your help to continue to provide shows like the one we just heard. But you may be asking yourself, hey, why should I make a donation? Well, I'll tell you. Infrastructure and administration costs for a free site like this are astronomical. So if you like what you see and hear, if you enjoy all the wonderful features of DrDickSexAdvice.com and DrDickSexToyReviews.com, then I invite you to make a modest one-time donation online. We suggest a donation between $20 and $50, but any amount will be gladly accepted. This is a one-time donation. There are no automatic credit card renewals or processing fees. And you can be certain that every dime you donate will go to supporting this valuable sex-positive effort. Finally, your donation underscores your social conscience. Your sponsorship helps to disseminate badly needed sex education and sexual enrichment messages throughout the entire world. I thank you in advance for your generosity. And until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex, well, that's even better. Over and out.